All right, Tim Easton, it's nice to see you. Good morning. Thanks for joining us on MOT.
Good morning, Craig.
Paco and the Melodic Polaroids. Curious title that brings together two things, Paco being the guitar. Let's talk about him first.
Yeah, Paco is a 1985 Gibson J45 guitar, the old workhorse guitar that I bought in Columbus in 1987, used for $100 and two no-name electrics on trade. So I've played this guitar for 30 years now, including 7 years on the streets of Europe as a street musician.
Has it ever been stolen? Ever lost touch with it?
No. No, simple answer there. It's been taken to the doctors a few times, though. Joe Glazier Instruments have helped me keep it alive and keep them going.
The Melodic Polaroids in the title is a rather innovative approach to making a record that's not innovative at all. So describe these sessions at the Ernest Tube in Bristol, Tennessee.
Yeah, I called it Melodic Polaroids because these recordings are instant recordings. They were done, they were recorded direct to lacquer. That's where you go in and you record on one microphone to a portable lathe, which cuts the song right into a vinyl disc, a lacquer disc, an acetate, basically. It's the way they used to make records years ago, like when Ralph Peer made the famous Bristol sessions with the Carter Family and Jimmy Rogers and others. And if you would have listened to Lead Belly or you've been listening to Robert Johnson, you would have heard direct lacquer recordings.
You weren't far geographically from where those famous quote-unquote Bristol sessions birth, you know, the big bang of country music were made. Describe the actual building and the block you were in.
Oh, yeah. It's Bristol, Virginia is kind of ground zero for the big bang and big boom of country music, of commercial country music records. And I was just right around the corner. The building where the Carter Family recorded in is no longer there, but right down the street or around the corner is the Ernest Tube, which is a studio that is next to the Country Music Museum there. And it basically was started by two guys from Cleveland, Dave Polster and Clint Holly. They brought their lathe down there and opened up this studio that you can go in there and you can get a lacquer disc and cut your own songs right there.
You're an Ohio guy. Did you know them before?
I knew of them. They also work at Well Made Music in Cleveland, so they helped me record the album to disc and then also master it, because you know you have to get it from the master disc to vinyl, and that, you know, today does involve a computer process, so everything goes digital eventually. So yes, this album is also available in that format.
But when we hear the CD version or we hear a stream version, the first thing that had to happen after you made the recording was a needle had to go into that acetate and dub to a digital source. Is that how it worked?
Yeah, you basically, you know, I'm not the biggest tech guy in the world, but yeah, basically, you run the wires out of the back of that lathe and into a computer, and then eventually everything gets digitized, just like today. If you want to Spotify or something up a tune, you know, it's digital eventually, so yeah.
And you record it into one microphone, so the guitar and the voice are happening on that one RCA vintage mic, is that right?
That is right. It's called mono.
What did the sound feel like to you in this space? You were just playing into the room, and I don't know, you weren't getting any feedback other than the same you'd be getting at home in your living room, right?
I would say that this kind of recording is not for the meek or them that gets nervous about the red light going on in a studio. You have to know your song well, as Bobby D said. You want to be prepared when you get in there. And it just so happens I had 14 songs that were ready to go in this kind of format where they wouldn't sound out of place on direct to lacquer recordings. And then we pared it down to 10 songs. One of the songs had a lyric that rhymed like Todd Snyder in it. And so I basically took out any song that had any reference to anything of the modern times, just because it just all of a sudden thematically felt like there was a group of traveling songs that basically is a love letter to my guitar, which I played for so many years.
We're going to include the video you did that shows the actual lathe process, where the acetate literally has to kind of carve this little fine ribbon, and part of the craft and art of making the record on their side, the producers, had to sort of brush it away and kind of watch it as it happens. Can you just what'd you observe about that process?
Yeah, that is an intense thing where, you know, Jack White has one of those recording booths down at Third Man. And you can go in there and cut a record, just kind of like Elvis used to, you know, they say Elvis first made a record to his mama, and how Russian soldiers used to send discs home to their family or whatever from the front. They'd have these portable lace out there. And when you go into the booth, there's nobody wiping the dust away. So, like, chunks of lacquer can fly underneath that needle. So what that guy's doing with the brush, what Clint Holly would do with the brush, what you'll see in the images, he's making sure that the lacquer that gets cut away as the needle is burning your song in there doesn't fly back under the needle and then cause that glitch, that sound that we're all familiar with that sound, and you're going to get a few of them, you know. I mean, the most microscopic dust or hair could make the needle make a little noise.
Well, the recordings that I've heard of this are pristine, totally rich, totally full spectrum. They're gorgeous recordings. This is a remarkable way. There's no sacrifice in audio, is there?
Yeah, thank you so much. You can really, it's a big hats off to Clint and Dave, you know, who made this happen. And they're doing it, you know, still to this day. So if you're a songwriter or a poet and you're passing through Bristol, Virginia, you can visit the Ernest Tube and go cut a record like this. And it's a really reasonable thing they're doing there. And also, it's just fun to make a product, or it's fun to do a project that has got a little more history and girth to it. You know, I wasn't setting out to do old-timey music or anything like that. This is just another one of my ideas that I followed through on. You know, I think of these things and I like to follow through on my ideas. And this one is a very simple album made directly and right for the listener, and it cuts out all the middlemen.
I find myself right now personally getting very attracted to spare acoustic and deeper rooted folk stuff, maybe because there's an abundance of big electric sounds from Aaron Lee Tashin to even some of the stuff we would put in the kind of country Americana category. Jason Isbell's band is very robust, big, with electric elements, and that's all wonderful, but somehow I find myself in a phase of craving the spare feeling, and you suggested before we started talking that maybe you're in a phase like that too.
It's called getting older, Craig. It's, well, I mean, really, the two guys you named are friends of mine, and they make beautiful records, and they travel around with a rock and roll band and put on a show. Those guys put on a great show, I'm not able to really afford to do that kind of thing. Like, I've made this album, I'm determined to make a living doing what I do, but I really have turned to folk out of a love for it. But then all of a sudden I find it's like, oh, this is how I can kind of get out there and survive. I love traveling with a band and playing with a band, and I will do that again. But right now I'm able to keep my head farther above the water traveling as a solo guy, and I figured, why not? And also, I was tired of like making a record and then going to play solo and then someone coming up and saying, I want what I just heard. And then so I would have this band production thing, and it, like, this time now I can actually say, this is, you're getting what you just saw. So I basically had a couple of motives for making an album simply like this, and I've already written a bunch more songs, so I'm working all the time on projects, and this one is just came together so quickly and so easily, and I'm proud to just celebrate this time I've spent with my guitar.
You've alluded to it here and there, but can you just, for folks who are getting to know you, kind of synopsize how you have put a living together over the years? I've had different phases and times, and you know, that's a big thing to summarize, but my hats are off to you, because you're a wonderful songwriter. I don't think you get as much recognition as you deserve, but you're here, you are, you're a dad, you've got a big catalog, you've got imaginative projects including 100 songs in 100 days recorded to YouTube in the past years or a change, what's been your attitude and your approach to making that living in a what's obviously a tough row?
Are you saying I'm a workaholic?
Could be.
Most definitely. I have had definitely a career of ups and downs, but I feel very, very grateful and very lucky to be able to go out and still do it and play my songs. Now, I mean, I didn't get all these songs written or all these albums made by sitting around in coffee shops talking about it all the time. You know, it's like I believe in work and getting the work done. I show up every day and I try to write. I try to read a little bit and write a little bit every day. And if it's not songs, it's like, you know, prose or poetry or just journal writing. So I just believe in working hard and getting it done. There's those that just kind of like make an album and then sit on it for 5 years, and I just never felt like I could do that. So yeah, I've gone through a few managers and a few different booking agents along the way, who are not in lockstep with my workaholic ways, but it's okay. I mean, I'm very happy to just, I'm going to Japan next month. I mean, there's a lot of, I don't get down on it. You know, I feel like really fortunate about it. Yeah, every now and then I wish I had a certain gig or something like that, but it's like, there's a lot of people that wish they had the gigs that I have. So I just really try to like deliver now and be grateful and just like deliver every show like it's the best show I'm ever going to play.
That's really nice. In fact, it's so nice. I want to end, but I am going to ask you a last question about the 100 songs in 100 days. Well, just because if people are wanting to get to know you, there's a place where they can go hear kind of a lot, you know, your whole catalog virtually. If that's in fact what you were doing, you said you hit 100 songs published in your career, and that it sounded like you committed those in a kind of just acoustic way to video.
Right, that was the beginning of like, a good song is a good song done solo acoustic, you know, on the piano or guitar, or just even sung without an instrument. So I basically decided to cut 100 songs in 100 days live on video and you know, start a YouTube channel, basically start my own YouTube channel, since music is free, I guess, you know, as the Gillian Welch song says, you know, and so we have different ways to now kind of open up the door to folks to check out what we do. And going and recording those songs every day, that was, by the way, one of the craziest things I've ever tried to do. And it about broke me, I got to say. But out of 100 videos, only 3 or 4 of them where I'm like iffy on right now. And maybe the sound quality didn't quite work out. But I learned a lot about recording and making videos. And I got my daughter, by the way, participates in a few of those, and those are my favorite ones. And there's nothing I'm doing in my career as a songwriter or musician that is as important as what's going on between her and I.
How old is she?
She's 7 years old.
Great. Well, best of luck to you, to her, and to everything. Tim, it's been great to talk to you.
Hey, Craig, thanks so much for having me.